All right, here we go. Are you ready in there, Reggie? We're all set. The needles are bopping at an acceptable rate. I'll make those things really move as we get started here. I got some things to say today, pal. Hopefully at least an hour's worth. All right. Are you ready? All set? All the gizmos are all lined up. All right. I will I'll give you the three S's and the music countdown, and you give me that music, and then I'll give you a podcast. And we're in business. All right. Good. Put it in the book. Episode 256. And here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or we are found wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. It only makes sense that we should be there, right? Now, as I say every podcast, I appreciate you listening, but you're not off the hook. I mean, that's kind of passive. We need you to be active as a part of this podcast. So spread the word. We need your help. Send a link, send a message to your friends, to your family, whoever listens to podcasts, and let them know that one of your favorite podcasts, if not your most favorite, is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. You can't just be so selfish that you want to keep this all to yourself. That extra effort is much appreciated, as is your loyalty and your continued devotion. If you like what you hear, don't forget, you can go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, click on the prompt for this podcast, and you will find all previous 255 episodes. Wow. Sounds like an impressive number, doesn't it? Well, how about this number? Welcome to 256. So I wanted to talk today about something that I've been noticing over the, I don't know if it's just been since the pandemic began. It's probably been going on a lot longer, but it really now seems to have taken hold and become the norm. I had hoped that perhaps this trend that I had been observing for a while might have run its course. But now I fear that it is not only not running its course, but it's actually become par for the course, which is a little disappointing. And so I thought I'd share that to see if you agree or not, and just sort of get this out in the open, because it's been bugging me for a while. So does anybody remember from the classic the song Remains the Same Live double album from the 70s by Led Zeppelin? Does anybody remember laughter? Well, that line that Robert Plant said right before introducing Stairway to Heaven on the song Remains the Same, which was also a film. And it still is, a very popular live album of theirs from the 70s. But, does anybody remember laughter? And I bring this up because it seems like over the last 4 years during the Trump presidency, and even though before that, maybe not as intense, because everything over the last 4 years during the Trump presidency was intense, especially from a media and an entertainment standpoint. There was very little objectivity. There was a lot of rhetoric, some of it vulgar, Some of it inappropriate, some of it way over the top, but it was the norm. It became the norm. But what I've noticed now, I mean, now that, that Donald Trump is no longer president, and supposedly, you know, things are now more settled down and more under control, and, you know, life is good now, apparently. This aspect is not gone. And what I'm getting to is, are comedians funny anymore? Are they supposed to be funny anymore? Do they want to be funny anymore? And I bring this up because, you know, over the last 4 years, especially the late night shows, and that's where I was initially sort of aiming my my comments and my observations at. But the more I thought about it, the more I think you could almost expand it out past just the late night TV talk shows, which I don't even know if we can even call them talk shows anymore. They are more like extensions of political shows. Now, I understand to a great extent, over the last 4 years especially, politics has been the major story. Whether it was media created or not, it was the lead story on everything. But I've always viewed, at least I always thought, that one of the main attractions of late night television shows was that they should provide both, yes, a reflection of the moment, of the day, a little recap in perhaps, but also provide a little escape, a little distraction from everything that we were inundated with during the day, especially right before we're going to go to sleep. The whole idea was, I think, and the joke was for the first 50 years of The Tonight Show, that, you know, most people, and Johnny did it for 30, Johnny Carson, that, you know, Johnny Carson put more people to sleep than any comedian in entertainment history. Now, that was a little jab and a joke, but also a little grain of truth, because the idea was that, you know, you're unwinding at the end of the day, and it's time for a little decompression and just maybe to laugh and to relax and to, yes, maybe even get lulled into sleep. So, yes, in many ways, Johnny Carson did put many people to sleep, and that wasn't a criticism, because in a way, he was doing his job. You know, the early days of The Tonight Show, the show was 90 minutes long. It wasn't an hour. Now that's par for the course. That's the norm, an hour. But up until when Johnny Carson, well, I think even before, during Jack Parr's time and Steve Allen's time, and then Johnny, the show was an hour and a half. And it was only in the mid-80s when Johnny Carson had such power, because the show was such a juggernaut, that he was not only able to command the highest salary in television, but also was able to pretty much call the shots of what he wanted. And he felt that as time was going on, he wanted to not have to do an hour show anymore. I mean, a 90-minute show, but he cut it to an hour, and that became what every late-night talk show now is. And it does seem to be just the right amount of time. I know younger people, I'm sure, keep hearing about Johnny Carson, how great he was, how good the show was, how different the show was, and it was, all those things. But it was also a show of its time. And The Tonight Show did evolve over time. But as I said, when it started, it was 90 minutes long. And so in the Central Time Zone, for instance, the show started at 10:30 in the evening and went to midnight. So, you know, that's pretty late to stay up on a school night, even for an adult going to work the next morning. So yeah, a lot of times the thought probably was that, geez, you know, by 11 o'clock, or say our time, or 11:30, I mean, most people might be turning off anyway. And even on The Tonight Show, when it was 90 minutes long, in its heyday, the last half hour was mostly, a lot of times, it featured authors. It wasn't the high-profile, big acts, the big singers of the day, or the big comedians of the day, or the big actors in a film. That last half hour was kind of a throwaway, realizing that a majority of the viewing audience was probably either nodding off or had turned the television off. So the show is still on for those who were hanging around, but it was really the first hour of the show back then was when all the major entertainment value was happening. The show got a little sleepy toward that in that last half hour. Even the band. If you ever watch full-length episodes of The Tonight Show, the 90-minute episodes, you'll even notice that at the beginning of the show, the band, you know, the great The Tonight Show band led by Doc Severinsen, and if you haven't seen it, I would urge you to tune into your local PBS station and watch an American Masters special on Doc Severinsen, who for more than 25 years was the leader of the Tonight Show band, a great trumpetist, great trumpeter and jazz musician in his own right, but then certainly went on to much bigger fame as the nightly band leader of the Tonight Show band, and sometimes would fill in Fred McMahon as Johnny's sidekick as well. And I learned a lot about Doc Severinsen that I never knew. He was always just the band leader that wore the flashy suit jackets and some clothes and was kind of the hipster amongst kind of the square crowd of The Tonight Show with Ed and Johnny. But wow, what a musician he was. What an interesting person he was. And he's in his 90s and still playing the trumpet and still hitting those high notes. Very impressive. So check that out on PBS. I saw it a few weeks ago. It's under the American Masters series. And I don't know if those are available online as well. But you go, Doc Severinsen, who the heck is he? Well, that's what I said until I watched this program. So check that out. There's just some information about his work on The Tonight Show, obviously, and his relationship with Johnny, which is interesting and insightful. But even when the show was 90 minutes long, the band at the beginning was cooking, man. They were the theme song, the ba da da da, I mean, was percolating with energy and coming in and out of the commercials. You could hear the band was playing for the audience, the live audience, while the TV people were watching commercials, and they'd come back. And Johnny was just loved that band, and he was a kind of a amateur drummer himself, and he would always be tapping his pencil to the band and always would make a comment like, "Well, that was really good, Doc. Wow, you guys were really hot tonight." So there was just the energy level of the show was always at a high pitch from that during that first hour of the show. And then when it was still in 90 minutes, the last half hour, as I said, got a little lower in energy. The guests were, as I said, were sometimes lawyers, like doctors or scientists or authors. And even the band would play like slower, quieter music going in and out of the breaks during that last half hour. It's almost as a hint to the fact that people were either falling asleep at home, and so they, you know, you don't come back with this loud music when people might be nodding off. So there was almost a built-in expectancy to the show when it was 90 minutes. At that last half hour, most people were beginning to, you know, the Sandman was making his appearance, his arrival, or the eyelids were certainly getting lower, or the televisions were shut off. The eyelids were getting heavier, you know. And so that's why at the end of the day, I'm sure they decided, hey, you know, let's just cut this to an hour. Johnny didn't take a pay cut. That's for sure. But it is better at an hour. It is. Now, and also, don't forget, talk about the show running an hour and a half and getting into the wee hours of the night and early morning. Don't forget, on the East Coast, the Tonight Show started at 11:30 and ended at 1 o'clock when it was the 90-minute show. So that's kind of late. I mean, you know, you still got to get up. So the Tonight Show was, you know, on the East Coast, I'm sure that by 12:30 Eastern time, most people were ready to call it a night, unless there was really a great show that was just having some great times. But anyway, so yeah, the show was always meant, I believe, to be a nice kind of end of the day distraction, entertainment, and at the end of the day, maybe, you know, help you relax enough to fall asleep. And Johnny Carson's, for many years, his monologue at the beginning of the show was viewed not only by the audience, but by newsmakers and by politicians as a barometer of what people were talking about, of how people were feeling. The great thing about Johnny Carson was in 30 years, you never really knew what Johnny's politics were. He would hint at it, but he was an equal opportunity jokester. He would make fun of a Republican president and a Democratic Congress, as well as he would make fun of a Democratic president and a Republican Congress. He didn't pick sides. Everybody was open to possible, you know, ridicule if they deserved it, if they had done something that deserved it. He didn't make excuses for one side and then attack the other. And so that's why so many politicians and newsmakers and reporters looked to the Tonight Show monologue, because it really gave you an insight as to where maybe the country was going. Johnny didn't move the country. I don't believe he felt that it was his job to influence the country by his jokes. What he wanted to do was relate to the country. What he wanted to do was reflect what the country was feeling, reflect what they were both laughing at as well as what they were angry about in the 70s, during the energy crisis, during the oil shortage, during the inflationary times. There was a lot of jokes about the high cost of food, the high cost of meat, the high cost of gas, the long lines for gas, the blackouts, because that's what people were talking about. That's what was affecting people's lives. And so that's what Johnny's monologue many times talked about in a fun way, jabbing it, satirical, making fun of it. But the idea was, from his standpoint, to tap into what people were feeling and how they were feeling. Or maybe remind them how they were feeling. But he wasn't trying to change their way of thinking. And today, on the late night talk shows, there's no question that there is not a reflection of what people are thinking. The goal by most of the late night people, and by that I'm saying the hosts, and by that I'm basically talking about Stephen Colbert on CBS and Jimmy Kimmel on ABC. Not so much Jimmy Fallon on NBC, because Jimmy Fallon, admittedly, himself, he knows he's not politically oriented. He doesn't know a lot about politics. He's been forced to get a little more political in his comedy and during his monologue, especially during the last 4 years, because that was bringing up ratings for both Colbert and Kimmel. But that's not Jimmy Fallon's, you know, sweet spot. That's not his bailiwick. You know, he's kind of a little puppy dog that's always nipping at your at your cuffs trying to get your attention and like him. And he'll do anything that it takes for you to like him. And that's why he sort of went into that. And it's not his forte. And I'm sure he's happy now that he doesn't have to be overtly political, because that was kind of where I think he was pressured in going in. And it wasn't his strong suit. Now, I'll admit, I'm not a big fan of Jimmy Fallon's. In terms of being a talk show host, I think he's a funny guy. I think he does great impressions. I think he's more made for a variety show. I think his talent is better used where it began, on a place like Saturday Night Live, where he could either poke fun at the news in a small little bite where he got, you know, but it was more Tina Fey, I think, and his chemistry with Tina Fey that made him popular on the Weekend Update segment. And then his impersonations. He's not a great actor by any means, but he does some great impersonations. There's no question about that. I don't think he's suited to be a late night talk show host in the traditional sense, in that he is not a very good interviewer. I don't know if he would admit that, but he is not a very good interviewer. And he fawns over. He did an interview with Bruce Springsteen back in October, when Springsteen's album came out, I'm a Springsteen fan, and I couldn't watch it. It was embarrassing. He was fawning over Springsteen so much that there was nothing interesting about it. No interesting information was passed along. Springsteen didn't even know how to react, because it was so over the top in his fawning over it. And there's nothing wrong with being a fan of someone that you're talking to. But it's also your job as an interviewer to step away and also be a little objective and probe and get your guest to be loosen up and to talk about a variety of things. But Jimmy Fallon is just not a good interviewer. And so I've never really watched his late night, Tonight Show. He's resorted to a lot of things. As I said before, he will do anything to get a laugh, which is good and bad. But for the most part, I think a lot of his humor is just kind of the moment, and playing games with celebrities, is not interesting. It may have been funny a few times because it was different, but now it's become a staple of his show and it's just not interesting. And of course, the celebrities, they overreact and overact to that as well. It's really, there's a lot of overreaction on that whole show. And, even that little bit he does with the music, with everybody's playing kazoos and it's kind of kiddie music. Once again, a cool thing to do once or twice, not a staple. So not a fan of Jimmy Fallon's overall in his role as the Tonight Show. I respect his talent as an entertainer. I just don't think he's well suited to be the host of a late night talk show. But basically, in terms of Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, those two shows have become overtly politically based, certainly over the last 4 years. And so from my standpoint, I'm wondering, is that now what late night talk shows are? And also Trevor Noah from The Daily Show, very political, which started, the tradition of that started with Jon Stewart. And of course, then Steve Colbert had the Colbert Report, which he played this ultra conservative, which he's obviously not. And so that was kind of an interesting 1-2 punch, because Jon Stewart was very liberal minded. And then you had Colbert playing a righty, playing a conservative, even though in his real life he wasn't. So that was kind of a character. And it made for a nice little interesting, give and take for that hour. And for that time, it was entertaining. But sadly, what I've been finding now over the last several years, and certainly the last 4 years, and I thought it would end now that President Trump was gone, that the political and the almost the lecturing and the political talk on these late night talk shows are dominating. And it's like, you know, that we're looking, I at least look for late night talk shows, as I said before, to be a release, to be a distraction, to be an escape from all this rhetoric that we may have been hearing all day in this world of 24-hour news operations and 48-hour-a-day, social media being inundated. We're getting enough of this everywhere else. I would hope that the late-night talk shows would be an escape from that. But not only are they not, but they're becoming almost as political as the Sunday morning political shows, like Meet the Press and Face the Nation, and This Week with George Stephanopoulos. I am a political junkie. I love politics. I have from a young age. My dad enjoyed it. He always watched the Sunday programs. I was watching the McLaughlin Group on Channel 11 as a teenager, long before it became kind of this cult thing and later on was spoofed on Saturday Night Live by Dana Carvey, which was one of the best skits they ever did. But as a young kid, I knew who John McLaughlin was and Eleanor Clift and Morton Kondracki. I used to watch that on the PBS show here in Chicago on Channel 11 every Saturday at 6:30. That's when it was on. I have always been interested in politics as a young kid growing up in Chicago during the first Mayor Daley's reign, even though he died in 1976. I was still a young kid, but it was politics was really was very prominent in Chicago. The Daley machine ran everything. Everybody knew somebody who worked for the city. I was always interested in politics, national as well as local. So you would think that this would be right up my alley, right? Well, the fact of the matter is that I do get my fill of politics. I love political cartoons. I've always been involved and interested in politics. Not so much involved. I'm not ringing doorbells and things like that, but always interested in it. I know the players. I know the history. I know the issues. So you'd think that, wow, well, this is right up your alley, Jim. Right? Why are you complaining about these kind of shows when this is what interests you? That's right. I go to certain places for that information. And for late night television, late night talk shows, I go, and I would think most people would want to go, they used to go, to that as a distraction and an escape from the heavy issues of the day. Especially right when you're going to go to sleep. Do you want your blood pressure to be going up? Do you want to be all, amped up when you're ready to go to sleep? No, the whole idea is, now I can relax. The news is over. I got my latest fill of what was going on in the world, and now I can just sit back and relax and laugh a little, hear some music, hear some jokes, see an entertainer or an actor in a movie, and then nod off to sleep. But in today's world, especially over the last 4 years, the late night talk shows became not only extensions of the Sunday morning political shows, but they became political shows unto themselves. They stopped being comedy shows. Yes, the monologues made jokes, but they were mean-spirited jokes. They weren't funny jokes. They were attacking jokes. They were groupthink jokes. They were aimed at a certain audience that hated Donald Trump, and they were skewering him. They were a nightly, friar's roast. They weren't good-hearted. They weren't there to be satirical or to reflect some observance of the day. They were there to attack with venom. So much to the point that I have stopped watching the late night shows. I used to watch David Letterman religiously. And when David Letterman left, I stopped watching. Now, you have to remember, too, and I like Stephen Colbert. At least I used to. I used to watch the Colbert Report. I used to watch John Stewart. But then he got a little too full of himself, too, and then I stopped. Because then all of a sudden he became known as, you know, where America really gets its news. And I'm like, at the end of the day, John Stewart is a comedian. Let's remember that these folks are not political pundits. They are comedians. Now you can argue and say, Jim, yes, but it's through comedians many times that political satire comes from them, that the comedian has always been poking fun. Even back in ancient times, the jester or the fool, if you read Shakespeare, the fool was often the smartest person in the king's court. He played the fool, but especially if you read Shakespeare's plays and there's a so-called jester or fool in that, he's often the smartest of them all. He is able to fool and play up to and suck up to the king, but he's also making the most keen observations and the most memorable lines and the smartest and the most insightful, sometimes serious, sometimes funny or satirical. But the fool has always been the smartest, despite his role as the fool. So I understand the role of comedy and the role of comedians talking about politics. Lenny Bruce was arrested many times back in the 60s during his shows for his political and edgy comedy. Sometime X-rated as well, but Lenny Bruce really changed the focus of stand-up comedy because he did start to talk about the news of the day. There was also a political satirist called Mort Saul, whose nightclub act and his whole act was he would have the newspaper. He would bring the newspaper with him on stage and be commenting on the news of the day in a funny and satirical way. Certainly also with a definite point of view. But in today's world, the rhetoric has amped up so high that a lot of the satire has gone. It's been replaced by venom. And so when you watch Steve Colbert go on one of his rants, especially during the Trump administration, or when you watch Jimmy Kimmel, who was never political, but when he saw that politics was working for Colbert, then suddenly he became this far-left commentator and then attacked Trump. I don't think he's done it as successfully. I don't think he pulls it off, but he does it. But now that's accepted as part of his shtick, as part of his persona, which I think weakens him. I've never been a big fan of Jimmy Kimmel's either. He was always kind of a David Letterman wannabe, but he never has the edge. He doesn't have the edge. He wants to have the edge. He's trying to have the edge, but it doesn't come naturally. Letterman had an edge. Letterman was quirky. It was natural to him. He had a natural sarcasm. Jimmy Kimmel isn't as pandering as Jimmy Fallon is in trying for you to like him, and he'll do whatever he can to make you smile. But I always felt that Jimmy Kimmel tried too hard. It didn't come as natural to him. He wants to be edgy. He wants to be like David Letterman. But then at the same time, he also wants to be liked. And he's non-threatening. And that's why you see him hosting all these award shows and hosting all these other specials, because ABC, where he works, feels as if he's not going to, he's not over threatening. At times he may try to be a little edgy and say something, but at the end of the day, he will never go over the line. He'll get close to it, but not real close. In ABC's world, you know, they're a very family-oriented network overall. If you watch all of their TV shows, for the most part, you know, their comedies especially, you know, they're very of the moment. They're very trendy. These days now, they're all very, you know, politically correct and, you know, inclusive and all in, and all that kind of that thing. They're not trying to push the envelope in any way. So Jimmy Kimmel for them is as outrageous as they want to get. But he's not really breaking many barriers. He's not on the edge. He's never gone over the line. I've always felt that he's, like I said before, kind of trying to be, but he never gets there. So when Stephen Colbert started, I was looking forward to this. I like Stephen Colbert. I like satirical, sarcastic humor that seems to flow naturally, and I believe that that's kind of where Stephen Colbert comes from. And so I was looking forward to his show when it premiered, and he totally tried to be different than what he made his bones as this kind of conservative character on the Colbert Report. He tried to fit the mold of a late night talk show host, more in the tradition of a Johnny Carson or a David Letterman, and it wasn't his style. It wasn't his style. His interviews were awkward. His comedy was awkward. You could feel that he was trying to be something that he wasn't. And it was different than in Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel thinks that he's cool and edgy, so he sells it that way, but I just don't feel it's authentic. Colbert, you could, during the first year of his show, you could literally see that he was trying to be different. He was trying to be himself as opposed to being himself. There's a nuance there. He was trying to be himself instead of just being himself. It was awkward. It was obvious. So much so that the show had horrible ratings and was very close. I mean, from all reports that I've read, the show was on, the Colbert's tenure was just about over. And then Donald Trump became president, and Colbert tapped into, especially a left wing kind of liberal side that was attacking Trump, and played into that, and became his whole show. That became the first half hour, and many of the guests that he had, even if they were actors and musicians, they piled on too. So, as I said, to the point that show became a political show. It stopped being an entertainment show, even though they had a band and okay, whatever. But most of the topics, most of the comedy was all revolving around politics and especially about Donald Trump. I heard enough of that, whether you liked him or not, beside the point, we were hearing enough of that kind of rhetoric and that same stuff for 12 hours during the day. Did we need more? I came there to escape from that. And not only did Stephen Colbert not provide an escape, he provided an even higher volume of vitriol and rhetoric and venom against Trump and the political scene. So I haven't watched that show in 4 years. At the same time, I recently saw that Barack Obama was on. I was watching that for about 10 minutes, and I had to turn it off because as crazy as he was against Trump, I thought he was going to kiss Barack Obama. He said at one point, Let me just soak you in. Okay? That's not a good interview either. You know, I mean, sadly, the Oprah Winfrey of style of interviewing has become the norm now. But, you know, there needs to be some objectivity. And today, sadly, in all of mass communications, whether it's comedy, whether it's the media, objectivity has gone out. It is no journalism, sadly, to a great extent, is gone. Journalism has been diluted by the internet, by blogging, by podcasts. There are no more traditional rules of what made journalism something that you could depend upon. Today, journalism is an extension of gossip, and it's also an extension of what your political views are. You know, we know now, if you're conservative, you go and you watch Fox News, and if you're a liberal-minded, you watch MSNBC. We know where to go to get what we want to hear. But we hear that all day. We're inundated. 24 hours, anywhere, CNN is on. You go to an airport, you go anywhere, CNN is on. You go on your computer, you're seeing the news. You're inundated. We should be able to go to a late-night comedy talk shows to laugh, perhaps, at some of the things of the day, but not be lectured, not be yelled at, not being tried to be converted to a certain way of thinking. They talked about Donald Trump being demagogues, but what has Stephen Colbert become? The same thing, only on the other side. Using rhetoric, using his forum of a national show to get his point across. Does anybody remember laughter? This is not about being old-fashioned or old school. This is about looking for and wanting some release from this constant pressure of the political talk that we have. That's why everything is so divisive. We can't laugh anymore. And the sad part is, nobody wants to seem to want to make us laugh unless they're making fun of a political figure. Stephen Colbert went to Second City. He's a comedian in training. When did he become a political pundit? Leave that to Chuck Todd and George Stephanopoulos and Rachel Maddow and Joe Scarborough. Leave it to them. Your job is an entertainer, as a comedian. Make us laugh. Entertain us. We get enough of that stuff. The 12 hours that we've been up for this last hour before we're going to go to bed, can you just make us laugh? But that seems to be the trend now. And from Stephen Colbert, you can't blame him. He was literally on the chopping block. The word was that they gave him a shot. They gave him a year and a half or so, almost 2 years, and it wasn't working. The ratings were terrible. James Corden, who was on after him, was getting better ratings. He wasn't political. James Corden has tried to get, he tried at times too, just like Jimmy Fallon, to get political. And it was so uncomfortable and so out of his, out of his comfort zone that he stopped. James Corden is an entertainer. He's a Broadway and a theater guy. He's not a political pundit. When he tried to do that, he got in trouble. James Corden is carpool karaoke. That's what he does. That's where his kind of entertainment is. To just having fun. I don't really watch his show because I do think that he also panders a lot. He's a great entertainer, I think. I don't think he's a very good host of a show like that. Sadly, there is an art to hosting a talk show. And today, comedians, I guess, are used to host anything. Comedians today host all the game shows. Comedians host all the award shows, and comedians host all the late night shows. Comedians host everything. I'm not surprised if one day a comedian will eventually become a news anchor, because they're hosting everything. And don't get me wrong, I love comedians. But I wish the comedians would make us laugh as opposed to trying to use their position to be some kind of spokesperson or political pundit. Most of the comedians now that you see doing stand-up are all political. What's wrong with just the observational humor? What was great about George Carlin was, yes, he was political, but he also framed it, at least early in his career. When he got older, he did get very political and very preachy, which sort of turned me off. But George Carlin was as smart as a whip. And in his best days, in the mid to late 70s and early 80s, he was satirically funny. He was poking fun, but he was observing things, and he was presenting it in a funny, communal way, not a preachy way. And that's the difference. Today's comedy, and I put that in quotes, is preachy. It's heavy-handed. I want to go to a comedy club or see a comedian and be in a good mood and laugh. I want to laugh. I don't want to clap. Comedians should be getting laughs, not claps. Clapping is for a political speech. Laughter is for a comedian. Where are the laughs? Stephen Colbert didn't start this. As I said, Jon Stewart perfected it with The Daily Show. If you remember The Daily Show, it was not a politically based show at all until Jon Stewart took it over. And then he became less of a comedian and more of a political observer and pundit. Now, he was still saying he was a comedian, but if you watch the content of the show, it was very politically based, and it was very one-sided in its view as to what was right and what was wrong. And since he's left the Daily Show, he has been very active in politics on the left. There's no question about that. So he was getting because he was a comedian, he was being viewed as, oh, this is being, it was comedy, but it really wasn't. It was political commentary with some jokes. And really where this whole idea started was not even with Jon Stewart. If you remember, Bill Maher had a show on ABC late night called Politically Incorrect, which was kind of a takeoff on the McLaughlin Group. If you recall, he had two or three guests. They sat in a circle in comfortable chairs, and they talked about the news of the day in a joking fashion as well as in a serious fashion. And it was different. It was kind of a, as I said before, it was almost like a parody of the McLaughlin Group. And Bill Maher was certainly able to get out some of his political views, but it was more comic based. The whole idea, Politically Incorrect. We're gonna push some boundaries here. We're not going to always say what's right. So that's where this kind of edgy political humor, I would say, in the last 20 years came. Political humor has been around forever. Will Rogers, Mark Twain. I'm not saying that this is a new trend, but what I am saying is that the abandonment of comedy in favor of political agendas seems to be happening in comedy now, especially on late night shows. I'd like to see just a goofy skit. I'd love to see a monologue that doesn't mention politics at all. How about that? Yeah, Johnny Carson. You say, well, Jim, you just said Johnny Carson, you know, used to be the barometer and a temperature and had his pulse on where people were thinking. Yes, because in that day, there were only three networks. There were no 24-hour networks. There was no internet. For many people, Johnny Carson's monologue is where they got the news of the day. So that's why that monologue may have been a little more based on news. Still funny, still poking, still jabbing, sometimes a little edgy, but that's why it took on that content, because for the most part, the average person got their news in the morning at their newspaper and at night on 6 o'clock news, maybe at 10 o'clock news again. They weren't inundated 24 hours a day or getting texts from people or watching CNN or MSNBC. It wasn't around then. So Johnny Carson's monologue could be a little more, a reflection of the news, could be a little more at times poking fun at politics, because there wasn't a lot of avenues to hear that kind of talk, funny or not. But now we are inundated with news. So the late night talk shows, rather than feeding that beast even more, they should be giving me an alternative. If I want to see that, I'll watch Rachel Maddow, or I'll watch, Tucker Carlson, whatever your political bent is. You know where to go if you want to get that kind of news. Or that kind of perspective on things, you know where to go. How about some laughter on late night? How about a monologue that doesn't mention presidential politics, wars, anything? How about some observational humor? That's why, Jerry Seinfeld is still the best at that craft, because that's what he does. I know that, but even Jerry has gotten, because that's where the trend is. But for the most part, he still sticks to his strength, which is observational humor about things that happen to people on a daily basis. And he takes those things and he points them out and then he exaggerates them for comic effect. And that's what comedy is. But we have forgotten what comedy is. Now everybody's expected to have some kind of political view if you're a comedian. Why? How about a good knock-knock joke? And it's not just the late-night shows, but now what I've seen, and I don't watch the show because, once again, it's gotten so overtly political that I stayed away, and I don't think it's been particularly funny even aside from the politics. But Saturday Night Live, I'm seeing just online – on Mondays, they and Sunday mornings or Monday mornings online, you'll see, during the weekend update, they'll show little clips from Saturday Night Live that may have been, interesting or funny. Well, from what I'm gathering, I don't watch the show, but what I'm seeing when I'm seeing the headlines and I'm seeing these little 5-minute clips, the hosts of the two hosts, I guess, which you would call, of the weekend update on Saturday Night Live are now because they think they're real anchor people. They think they're real news people. They are now commenting on the news. It's a comedy show. Weekend Update started and on the original Saturday Night Live in 1975. As a spoof of a newscast, Chevy Chase was not making real commentaries. He was spoofing the news, spoofing a newscast. That's why it was funny. If you watch the early weekend updates with Chevy Chase and then later on with Bill Murray and later on with Jane Curtin and with Dan Aykroyd, yes, they talked about news, but they were making fun of it. They weren't preaching. It was parody. It was satire. It was comedy. It wasn't political commentary. The hosts now, when I see the highlights from Weekend Update, they're talking about racial injustice and George Floyd and Asian hate crimes. I'm not saying that these are not important issues to talk about, but they're not supposed to be talked about by comedians on a comedy show. These guys were hired to be funny. They weren't hired for their political acumen. But now they think because, well, you know, everybody's talking about politics and you have to be politically correct and you have to show that you're interested in all this stuff and there's this new culture here, that nobody's being funny anymore. If I'm watching Saturday Night Live, I want to laugh. I don't think it's all that funny anymore, but at least it's supposed to be. But now the Weekend Update segment, I mean, let's face it, you know, the beginning, you know, yes, you know, when Alec Baldwin was doing Trump, you know, that was probably the most people have been watching Saturday Night Live for decades. You know, and it was funny at the beginning, but then it got over the top in terms of its hate and its vitriol to the point where it wasn't funny anymore. They started to believe their own news clippings. They started to want to change people's attitudes as opposed to entertaining them. I don't want to hear the anchor people, in quotes, on Saturday Night Live telling me their political views. That is meant to be a satirical spoof on the news of the day. That's how it started. Tina Fey did it. Bill Murray did it. Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd did it. Norm MacDonald did it. But now, everybody seems to think that they have to be on a soapbox and spew their political views. These are comedians. They didn't study political science. They studied Abbott and Costello, or they studied Jim Carrey. Comedians need to be funny. Yes, as I said before, politics and humor have always gone together. And I mentioned Will Rogers and Mark Twain, satirists, getting their point across, but doing it in a clever and funny way, not a preachy way. George Carlin, Lenny Bruce. But you know what? There's something to be said for Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy and Jerry Seinfeld. Pure comedians who made us laugh at ourselves. That's humor. That's comedy. That's stand-up. If I want to get a political speech or a political conversion, I will go to a political event. But when I go to a late night talk show, or if I go to a comedy club, I'm going there to laugh. I'm going there to escape. Let's be funny again. If there was ever a time in our history or this nation's history, It is right now we need to laugh, folks, because this pandemic ain't going anywhere. As much as the news or your politicians want you to think it is, it's not. And we're only extending it by pretending that it's over, by opening things up too soon, by not wanting to get vaccinated, by not following the guidelines. In our effort to shorten this as much as we can, we're only prolonging it. So we need some entertainment, folks. We need to laugh. The comedian does have an important role in today's society. It's to provide a release, to provide an escapism, to provide an exhale, to provide a smile and a chuckle and a guffaw and a laugh and maybe a half hour or an hour of escapism from the troubles of the day, from the stresses of the day, and from the realities of the day. Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, all you people that are on television, Saturday Night Live, make us laugh again. Does anybody remember laughter? I hope we do. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, tell your friends, tell your family, send them a link, send them a message. Let them know that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty, your devotion, and that little extra effort is much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed episode 256. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. It's called laughter, folks.